You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 192nd episode, we talk about this week's comics, and this week there'll be no spotlight. Around the mic tonight is...
Hello, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Jane.
And no Nick, because he's learning about babies.
He is. But I brought a cold to the podcast, so that's my plus one.
That's very nice of you. Luckily, I can't catch it, because I'm in a different place from you. We're doing one of them weird-ass skipe shows, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We're a Skypie.
Yeah, which means it's going to be all awkward and weird, and there's no eye contact, and it freaked me out. And then I sort of start to drift off your talk, and I'll drift off, forget I'm doing a podcast, think I'm listening to a podcast, and then you'll have to tell me off and prompt me to say more.
Okay, I can do that.
Good. That's quite comforting. I'm sure there was something we're going to do. Oh, we should have a crack at doing what Nick normally does at this point, and talk about us being a comic book podcast that records weekly in Southampton, and we talk about comics, and there's various ways to get in contact with us.
Yeah.
For example, if you wanted to get in contact with the show, you could email us, Jane, couldn't you?
At mumcast@gmail.com.
Or people could talk to us on Twitter. I'm James Momb.
I'm Jane Momb.
And if you want to talk to Nicholas, he's Nick Site, N-I-X Site, because that's all clever. It kind of messes about with words. And we're in Google Plus and Tumblr and Facebook. I know we're on Facebook because I use Facebook now, so I know we're there. And what else? There's a blog, there's a website, and that's what's that, Jane?
That's mumcomics.com.
And we like to hear from you, so email us by all means, email address, and you can leave contributions there if you want to get involved with the show. We really like people sending us contributions, so we don't have to work so hard. Because I call this work, like this is work. It's not like being down a coal mine, is it? It's not proper work.
No.
But you can do us audio contributions of between 2 to 5 minutes and send them to the email address. And we really like it when people do that, because it's always interesting to hear other people's opinions on comics.
You can also leave us a comment on iTunes or any other podcatcher. They can be good or bad. We don't mind. Apparently, it's just good to have comments, though. Everyone likes to comment.
Ego boosting ones are best, but yeah, good or bad, it's fine. Just be honest.
Yeah, be honest. I think we did that okay.
Yeah, I think we did right. I mean, ultimately, the comment you leave, you've got to live with it. It's on your conscience. So if you can sleep at night saying you like us when all you really want to do is poke sharpen pencils into our eyes, fine. I'm fine with that.
So James is okay with you poking pencils in his eyes.
Well, no, I'm okay with people feeling they want to. I'm not entirely sure I want someone to actually do that. I've got a pencil right in front of me, actually, which I'll probably be playing with throughout the recording of this podcast.
So nothing to distract you, then?
There's everything to distract me. I'm in my bedroom where there's comics and Blu-rays. I'm just looking at my copy that you bought me of Ralph Bakshi's Wizards, which I keep meaning to watch. Actually, I haven't seen it yet, which is awful. It was a birthday present. I'm a dreadful human being. Jane, you should tell us about your week, because that's what we do in this bit.
Yeah. My week has consisted of being full of cold and having probably one of the busiest working weeks I've had all year. It's been a bit crazy. But I've been a bit world dominance about it all. For some reason, like, I'm ill and I'm going to work. I can dominate everything.
I'm quite pleased you've been out of the office while you feel like that, because obviously we work together and that would have been terrifying when you're in that sort of mood. I don't really want you to dominate me.
been insanely busy. We had, the weekend was lovely. We went to Nick's 40th birthday on Friday and had Greek food. And then Saturday was a getting bits around the flat done. And then Sunday was, oh, I'm ill. Let's not do anything for the whole day.
That sucks.
Yeah, no, well, not doing anything all day was pretty cool. So I'm quite amazed at how I've survived so far when I think about all the stuff I've actually achieved this week as well. It's not just being busy, it's actually being really productive as well.
That's good. I'm very pleased. You should do a podcast on how to be productive when suffering with a heavy summer head cold.
Because you just sort of think, wow, I've got a cold. How much worse can I get?
don't do it now. You should do it after you've done this. You've got the recording equipment right in front of you. Jane, you could call it Jane Snotcast.
that's the extent of it. And other than that, yeah, I keep getting told to take lots of paracetamol drugs and stuff, but just been kind of throat sweets just because they kind of taste nice more than anything else. I've just been riding out the cold naturally.
I was just telling you to buy some drugs because I'd like some.
Oh, no, other people keep telling me to take paracetamol, get my temperature down. I'm like, well, I will just be warm and gross anyway, so...
Well, it's nice to be warm. It's got a bit chilly in it with the rain, so it's quite nice to be warm, yeah. Exactly.
With a cold and the weather, it has felt a lot like Christmas.
Yes, it feels like Christmas in our house all the time because Scarlett keeps wanting to watch Mickey Christmas that we recorded at Christmas time, which is getting a bit tedious now.
And she keeps talking about the Christmas tree as well.
She does. She doesn't get seasons. She doesn't get it at all. It's most frustrating.
Do you think that she thinks birthday is a season?
I think she's pretty sure that birthday's a season, and I know she knows that we're in the season of her birthday at the moment, because she keeps going on about it's her birthday and she's going to Peppa Pig World, which is correct. She is going to Peppa Pig World, but, you know, who am I trying to kid? It's lovely. I'm really looking forward to it because I get on the rides and it's very exciting.
Yes, that's it for my week. How's your week been, James?
Well, just fine and dandy, Jane. Thanks for asking. Let's move on. It's all right, apart from having a slight mental breakdown on Twitter on a couple of occasions. I've had a tough week. It's been hard, but I won't bore you with it now. We all have lives. I went to Nick's thing on Friday too, and it's lovely. And Stephen Lacey was there, which is lovely.
Yes, I did remember
that. I remember we stayed at your house, didn't we?
I know, but I wasn't going to be all like, ooh, Stephen Lacey stayed at my house about it all.
He didn't have to be like that. He could have just said it because it's a thing that happened.
It is a thing that happened, and I cooked him breakfast.
Oh, look at you cooking him breakfast. Sort of, how many degrees of separation from Joss Whedon is that?
Two. It's got to be two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If only he'd interviewed Kevin Bacon as well, that'd have been quite...
Then I'd know everyone in the world.
You would know everyone in the world, and that'd be very exciting. If slightly hectic at Christmas. So I went to Nick's thing and we saw Stephen. I was a really poor host when he came. I was all a bit tired and emotional by the time he came. You all came back to my flat and I really wasn't a very good host at all. I sort of sat there looking quite morose, I think, which is something I do quite well.
I like it.
Good. You're used to it, to be fair. Stephen. So sorry, Stephen, if you're watching. I didn't mean to be quite so morose looking as I think I probably was. I'm normally a little more jolly than that. Am I? I'm not.
We'll say you really, are.
I am pretty much 90% grumpy. I think I save most of my cheerfulness for the podcast, and that's about it. And I haven't really done much, although it's funny, I was thinking earlier today about... I like listening to people talking about the TV shows they're watching at the moment and stuff, and I've put Game of Thrones, the seasons 1 to 3, I've put that on my my Amazon wish list. If you could see me, Jane, I'm doing that little thing with my thumb that denotes I've done something on my phone.
The phone signal with your thumb where it flaps up and down furiously.
That's exactly what I was doing while I was talking to you. There's no one else here, but I was still doing it for my own amusement. I was thinking the other day that my life really involves thinking more than I should about the CBeebies show Something Special. to the point where I was actually having a serious conversation with my wife this morning. Saying, I said to her, I really like the fact that Scarlett likes it. It's a 20-minute show, and they always sort of go off and do something different. It's this guy called Justin Fletcher, who's in lots of kids' stuff. And if you've got kids yourself, you will almost certainly know who Justin Fletcher is. But in each of these Something Special shows, he meets some kids with special needs, and they go off and do various things, and it features him as Justin himself going off and doing these things. And then also there's a character of his called Mr. Tumble, and he does funny things that kind of usually relate to the things he's gone out and done. But in the most recent series, there's a new series, and Mr. Tumble's moved. He's moved to a different home, and now the sections with Mr. Tumble in them don't always relate to the things that Justin is out and about doing with his friends.
So what you're saying is...
No, go on.
No, carry on.
Oh, that's a shame. I was hoping you were going to say something insightful.
Well, I was just going to say what I think the conclusion is going to be, is that it's just the second series just doesn't matter. It doesn't, you know, it's taking a nosedive. It's peaked too soon.
Well, it's the 11th series. But
oh God, you know that.
I was looking up this man on Twitter on the internet thing the other day because I wanted to know more about this man that my daughter had become obsessed with. But no, what I was saying to Nicola very seriously and earnestly in the car is, I like that she likes it and she really seems to like the new series. What worries me is there's no narrative thread in each show like there was before. Justin would do something, Mr. Tumble would reflect that. And they've lost that narrative throughout it. And Nicola did turn around to me and go, yeah, but Scarlett likes it. And, you know, it doesn't matter, does it? giving me some perspective. So clearly I want some sort of more thoughtful entertainment in my life. Because it's really, it's Something Special in Moonlighting at the moment, and that's about it.
Yeah, it does sound like you need something new.
I do, although I'm enjoying Moonlighting a great deal. It's lovely. I'm still on season two, which is very entertaining indeed. And that's my little, I do that when I go to bed and I watch an episode of Moonlighting. Am I telling you more about my life than I think people need to? Is this a signal to us that maybe we need to talk about comic books?
It is. Nice.
Jane,
done.
Thank you very much for having to notice that. I am the slick Rick of segues. Jane, would you like to tell us about the comic books that you have read this week?
I would. First up, I got an American Vampire fix this week. I know. It's been too long. I don't think I can go any longer. I'm not sure when the series is going to start again, but I hope it's soon. American Vampire Special, The Long Road to Hell, a one-shot, written by Scott Snyder and art by Raphael Albuquerque.
Hot dog.
Vertigo number one at $6.99.
Holy cow.
I know. I didn't see that until I finished reading it. It is worth it because I love, love, love the story, but I'm sure some people are like, ooh. it's a one-shot story, and it's following the Greaser character that we've been introduced to in the main series. And so it's set in 1959, and it's following a couple who they're youngsters, rock and rollers, but they're pocket pickers. Well, that's not right, is it?
It's not easy pickpockers. To say.
No, pick...
pickpockers. Yes.
They're the pickpockers.
Stop thief, a pickpocker has just stolen my pox.
What are they called? Oh, my brain's not working.
Pickpockets.
They pick pockets.
Yeah, they're a pickpocket.
Okay, that still doesn't sound right.
Yeah, but it's the thing. We couldn't do this recording at the studio. If I was to say pickpocket, I'd be popping all over the place.
Yes, they steal things from people, but generally at heart they're a good people. They're good people. They're doing it to get by. They get kidnapped by some vampires, and then get turned. The vampire that turns them is actually controls a coven of vampires and wants them to be part of it because of their thieving abilities. While this is going on, we're being introduced to a little boy and who's in an orphanage. It's set in the same time but in a different area. He can sense when people are bad. He just knows. It's not a superpower as such, it's just ultra observation, because he's in an orphanage, he's had a really rough upbringing. He gets bullied every day by the other kids because he knows things about them that they obviously don't like. It's, you know, they're not very nice things, and he can tell if somebody's bad. I won't spoil too much because it is a really good one shot, but the couple end up meeting the boy and things get really interesting. It's a really great one shot. Would love the series to be back in the series again. Hope that happens soon. And I would love a mini series of American Vampire again, because they have been really, really good. But hopefully there'll be more one shots in the future too, because this worked really, really well. Story is really good, quick, really funny, witty, and quite sort of heartful in places. And the artwork, as always, amazing.
Mm.
I do love that series.
It is. I looked up because you made me question myself. It is Pickpockets, and I recommend you look at the Wikipedia entry on pickpocketing.
Oh, okay.
Afterwards, Jane, just to educate yourself on the.
I was just going to watch Oliver.
Yeah, Twist. They're thieving little gits as well.
They've got them in there, haven't they? It just doesn't sound right, but I'm a bit fuzzy at the moment.
I had a packet of cigarettes stolen from me by a pickpocket in Paris on my honeymoon, so I've got a very. You steal my money by all means, but don't steal my fags.
A packet of cigarettes, that's odd.
Packet. I was Marlboro Lights as well. I was smoking at the time.
Oh my god.
I prefer a tobacco these days, but in those days, especially when travelling abroad, pre-rolled cigarettes were somewhat more affordable than they currently are.
Yes. Yeah, it's very true. But don't smoke, kids, it's bad for you. Yes.
Well, so's life. No one gets out of here alive, mate, do
they? I said kids. Wait till the legal age. They make your own decision.
Thank you, Jimmy Savile.
Moving swiftly on.
Now then.
The next comic I'm going to talk about is number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jared Way and Sean Simon, with art by Becky Cloonan.
Dream team.
I know. It's The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys. This, we saw a preview of this in the Free Comic Book Day, in the Dark Horse preview book. It was very interesting then, and oh my, it was definitely worth picking up. Forget the fact that I love everybody involved. The story itself is brilliant. If you loved Umbrella Academy and you're looking for that fix again, this is definitely going to be it. Obviously not the same story, but the same feels of the story. It's about, I had to make notes because it got a little bit, not confusing, but I read it so quickly. I had to reread it because I just wanted the story so badly. I read it again so I can make sure I made notes of people's names and stuff.
You never make notes, Jane.
I know, this is how much I really like the book, but I read it so quickly. And I thought, do you know what, I'm not convinced I took all of that in, but I really did enjoy it, so I read it again. It's set in a futuristic it's set in the future, let's go with that.
Cool. Works for me.
That's good. You're my core audience at this present moment in time, so that's good.
I am your only audience at this moment in time. It's good. And I'm feeling thoroughly entertained and looking forward to being informed. So, I mean, it's going pretty well as far as I'm concerned.
Good. So, anyway, it's down now. Great.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
It's set in a time where there seems to be an evil industry corporation who's taken over, and they reside in an empire called Battery City. And it seems like before this book, there was a big battle between Battery City and the Rebels of the Desert. And the Killjoys, turns out, were a team of heroes who were defeated. That's not spoiling very much because that is there's a synopsis in the front cover of that. We meet a girl on her own and she's listening to the radio. And the thing I really loved about the opening of this book is there's a lot of narrative through the radio. So she's listening to it. It's all very passive for the person in the actual story. But for us, it's really informative and it's a really well, really good way of doing it. A lot of information at once because there's a lot to come that you have to get your head around. It seems like in Battery City, there are things that patrol the deserts to obviously keep the rebels at bay. We have Draculoids. And Draculoids are all in white and they're masked. And the masks have something built into them. So if anybody seems to be having fun or looks like they've got some sort of optimism in their eyes or wearing some colours that they don't like, they get captured. And it's a choice of death or the mask. And they get put. And if they put the mask on, they become like the Draculoids. So everything's black and white and joyless. There's also another higher up in the hierarchy baddie called a Scarecrow, which we haven't seen. We don't see much of them in this issue, but they are spoken about and they seem to be even scarier than the Draculoids. Battery City, the bits you see of Battery City, you're introduced to the lobby, which is quite a seedy underbelly of the city where there are pawn droids.
P-A-W-N or P-O-R-N?
P-O-R-N, baby.
Oh, yeah.
So the city itself, you don't see very much. You only see this underbelly, but from the way the characters talk about the city in the book, you realise it's a really horrible place. People are controlled. A lot of the droids there need upgrades that they're not getting. Everything seems a little bit despair. In the issue, we do focus mainly on this girl with the radio and some of the rebels in the desert and how they interact with the baddies. So you get a real feel for every element that's been introduced to you at the beginning of the story. So it's a really good way of you have a bit of narrative and then you get to understand what's going on because there's a lot of information in this first issue. It's a great story. Like I said, I read it so quickly, I had to read it again. Really, really good. Loads of really interesting, really cool ideas in this. I loved Umbrella Academy, and I don't want to compare it to that. That's not fair, but that is the only other thing I've read of his. But it has that really nice, weird, but grounded feeling to it. So it's all really bizarre, but it feels really normal because the story makes it feel like it's normal. The art, hey, what can I say? It's Becky Cloonan, so it's amazing. The colorist on this actually is definitely worth noting that. Colors are by Dan Jackson. The coloring is very different to what I've seen any of Becky Cloonan's artwork before, and it's a very clear. The colors need to pop in this issue for the story, where you've got the black and white element of not having any fun or joy being represented there. The colour element is a big theme in this, but it's really quite subtle and it looks utterly gorgeous with Becky Cloonan's art as well. So it's a really good book. I'm really looking forward to this series. And it's good because my weeks have been pretty light recently. There's so much stuff that's finished. I couldn't find anything else that I was really sort of into. So it's good that I've got a new book to get excited about.
Problem is, I picked your books up for you this week. It was so expensive, I had to sell my shoes to get home.
Oh, sorry. But your shoes are uncomfortable anyway, so...
My feet are uncomfortable. I like the sound of the Draculoids, to be honest with you. They sort of... They seem to have the same attitude towards youthful fun that I do, and I like that.
Maybe you are one.
I think I might be. I'm worried that he had me in mind when he was writing.
Yeah, great book. Recommend. Hopefully there's still some on the shelf. If you see it, definitely nab it. It's worth it.
I hate to put you on the spot because I never know this. Do you know how many it's running for, or did you say?
Oh, I don't.
Because it's unlikely to be ongoing, isn't it? It's probably going to be a finite run.
Maybe. It doesn't say number one of anything. So no, it's not going to be that much of a limited series, but...
I help you out by looking on the internet while
that'll be good
because I feel bad now because I I never find these things out. I always feel
while you're doing that, battery says the industry that's that the evil industry that's sort of at the heart of all this is called Better Living Industries, and actually in the back of this issue there's some really quite cute sort of information posters, one about body bags and one about Plus, which is a type of battery, which again adds to another bit of background about the industry and about how the world is at that time as well. Yeah, it's got a really quite creepy logo as well.
And we are talking about the true lies of the fabulous Killjoys, aren't
yes,
we?
Yeah. Have you found it?
Good. Yeah, I found some stuff, but I can't. Oh man. Oh, don't you hate it when you think the internet should be giving you more information than it is?
You just want a fact sheet, don't you?
I would like a fact sheet. If I was more organised, I'd be doing this. Do you know, I can't actually easily find any information that tells us exactly how many this is going to run for. So I guess we'll just have to find out by
you'll
reading
know
it
when
every.
It's finished.
Yeah, say the end.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Thanks.
You'll know it's finished because it will end.
Okay. The last book I'm going to talk about is Peter Panzerfaust, issue 11. Written
back
by...
after a hiatus.
Yes, yeah. Written by Curtis J. Wabe and art by Taylor Jenkins. You too picked this up, James, didn't you?
I did.
It's got Hook in it. But we don't see him yet. And that's not spoiling anything, because when you open the front cover, there's a hook on there. And also...
It's a hell of a giveaway. Yes.
Yeah, it has been teased a bit on the internet, so I didn't know who's going to be in this issue before. It doesn't spoil anything. You know, hopefully you know the story of Peter Pan, so you know the hook's going to turn up at some point.
He's a reasonably well-known character in popular literature.
Yes, so, yeah. I love Peter Panzerfaust. This new arc of story is following Felix. So each arc, the guy who's investigating the story, sort of much, you know, at present day, John, is going and back and talking to different members of the Lost Boys. And now he's talking to Felix. I love this book so much. I was reading this and I was just thinking, I really wish this had been around when I was a kid. I loved it. I would have absolutely loved it. You know, you got the whole Peter Pan element, which isn't the character's there, but the story is completely different. So you've got the whole sort of youth revolting. That's right, isn't it?
They are revolting.
Against, you know, establishment and adults and not wanting to grow up. But it's set in World War II.
It's so much more gritty, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they are, you feel the sense of desperation in terms of the situation they find themselves in.
They're fighting a real fight, and it's, you know, it's a real fight for survival, but them joining the resistance and them sort of, they're in their own right. I'm so sorry, Slester. My cold's getting the better of me. In their own right, they're their own little... Was that the politest I'm sorry for clearing my nose ever?
It was, but then he carried on doing it, and frankly, inside, I'm throwing up. So.
I can't. It's gotten to the point where I just can't breathe. So, yeah, sorry. I'll just stop breathing in a minute and I'll be really quiet. The story. I forgot what point. Oh, they've in their own right. They've made their own little army by now, which is really, really good. The story. This is a setup story. There's a huge amount of scene setting in this, as we do find with some of these issues with Peter Panzerfaust, where you're learning more about where they are, what they're doing, and what's going to happen next. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous book.
I think it looks particularly beautiful, actually. It looks really... The style is almost sort of... The colour is a very sort of almost watercolour sort of style.
Yeah.
Over the top, it is a particularly gorgeous issue. Set 1 year after the events of the last book, is it not? So they've been in hiding and training.
Yes, yeah.
For a while, and you really get to see some of the sort of the rugged reality of they're essentially they're French resistance fighters now.
Exactly, they all look older as well. which yeah. I like. It's sort of a real time of them aging and them maturing as well.
But it's got really gritty. It is a really satisfying book, isn't it?
Yeah.
We should probably say thank you to... See, now this is the benefit of having a really good comic book shop at your disposal, because Steve, the manager of our local FP, I remember the first issue coming out, and you and I went there, and he got very excited and said, you have to buy this.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I probably wouldn't have picked it up without his recommendation, so... I keep meaning to say thank you to him.
Thank you, Steve. To say that the books that I've just covered, American Vampire, The One Shot, I don't need to ask for that to be in my standing order. It just gets put in there. It's things they know they us. Are. It's lovely.
Yeah, they are great. It doesn't always work in my favour when I'm trying not to spend too much money, but there you go. I shouldn't complain. Thank you, Jane. That was great.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'll do mine now.
Okay.
First up for me, I've had lots of time, so I didn't... Normally I see you on a Wednesday, but because you're real, we didn't come round, so I've had lots and lots of time to read comic books.
I wouldn't have been at any good company at all.
No, that's true.
You could have... I'd have fallen asleep. You could have drawn on me or stapled stuff to my face.
That'd have been fun. I probably wouldn't have known. I was quite stroppy after work yesterday, so I was listening to some Metallica very, very loudly, stomping around town to try and act as some sort of catharsis. And it worked a treat. First up for me is issue number 3 of Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. The writer is Brian Michael Bendis. Pencilers are Steve McNiven and Sarah Pichelli, with a plethora of inkers, colourers and letterers working on the story, it seems. When we last left the story, Peter Quill, the Star-Lord, and the Guardians of the Galaxies were stopping a Badoon attack on Earth after Star-Lord's father, who's the emperor of the Spartax Empire, basically banned anyone from entering Earth's solar system. So Peter, Star-Lord, and the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy are now prisoners of war and being held by the Spartax. And in this issue... we get to see Tony Stark acting a little bit as a fish out of water. He's prized out of his Iron Man armor, so has to cope with just being a guy amongst all of this fantastic technology, but he's just a guy with no access to any of his own, which is fascinating. We also get to see a little bit more of this Galactic Council that are clearly up to something, because they're the ones who made the decree. And also we have the welcome return of Groot, the tree creature. Star of the show, yet again, though, is Rocket Raccoon, who is just my most favourite character in anything I'm reading at the moment. Bendis writes him with such a frenetic glee that you can't help but smile every time there's some dialogue for the guy on the page. It is Blam, I Murdered You. He's definitely my comic book character catchphrase of the year. So it's very cool. There's a little bit of intrigue. We get to see a little bit of what's happening beneath the surface. And also there's some cool action as essentially the Guardians have to make a jailbreak. As I said, Bendis' writing of Rocket Raccoon spot on. But his writing is bang on throughout this. It is just the most joyous, energy-filled, riotous sort of comic book I'm reading at the moment. It's so much fun. It aches, to be honest with you. It doesn't take itself too seriously, you know? And it's sort of quite self-referential. I think having Tony Stark there as the observer, as the human observer, as all of this madness goes off around him, is quite interesting. And he sort of makes some comments about, I think in the Avengers, actually, you hear him talk about... traveling with a raccoon, actually, but it's brilliant. It really works well. It's a really enjoyable team.
I like hearing you talk about that.
I like the fact that I managed to conflate the last Avengers, in fact Avengers the one before last, and Guardians of the Galaxy, because I'm convinced it's the Avengers he was talking about Rocket Raccooning, because he's got this in Avengers, he's got this suit of armor that he's basically remote operating.
All right.
So he's off for the Guardians of the Galaxy, but he's remote operating this suit so he can appear in Avengers as well, which is a bloody cheat if you ask me. Next up is, I'm going to talk about every one of these because, frankly, I want to read it as soon as I get it. It's issue number 6, Dark Horse Comics Star Wars, by Brian Wood, Carla Stander on art, and Gabe Eltab is the colourer. When we last met, Leia looks like she's in all sorts of trouble as her prototype X-Wing has been taken down. But we get to see Luke show his true colours in this issue. And basically, the majority of the comic book is taken up with them laying a trap for the Star Destroyer that is bearing down on them and having to make a heroic escape. And also, we get to see, which is very cool, we get to see Leia in a back-to-tank, which is very cool. So, Jane, you won't really know that.
Yeah, well,
it's the big, big tank that you see Luke in Empire Strikes Back at the beginning.
Which one's Empire Strikes Back? Is that the first, second, or third
one? It's the fifth one, but it's the second good one.
But we don't count the prequels, do we?
Well, they exist. You can if you want.
Oh.
But no, it's the second of the original films. That clears that up.
I don't know. I'll have to Google it later.
You're not going to Google it, are you?
No.
Unusually for this book, because what Wood's done very much is he's shifted from, there's basically sort of three main stories going on. So you've got Leia and Luke in this X-Wing squadron, Chewbacca and Han Solo on Coruscant trying to meet up with a rebel contact to buy some weaponry. And then also you've got the intrigue with Darth Vader and the guy who's taken over his command on the Star Destroyer. But weirdly, the vast majority of the book is all about this daring rescue by Luke, who was banned from flying for flirting with one of his colleagues. And it's all bad. But right towards the end of the book, last couple of pages, you get this, and it feels a little bit... It's really hard to explain how it feels, but there's six panels, each sort of basically really quickly shifting between one thing and another. So you've got Vader talking to someone, talking to one of his minions.
Yeah.
Then you've got a little bit of Luke, and then you've got Chewbacca and Han Solo at the end, and then it ends in a really weird downbeat note, almost like the end of Empire Strikes Back. It's got a really Star Wars-y feel towards the end, where there's a lot of stuff going on, and then this weird downbeat ending. It's a great book. It's really engaging. It's a satisfying read. I have read stuff in the Star Wars universe that doesn't really pay off, but Wood writes engaging and intelligent books, so it was great fun.
I don't like Star Wars, but I do like listening to you talk about it when you're really enjoying it.
Good, that's very nice of you to say so. Thank you, Jay. Next book I read was issue 12 of the Manhattan Project, which is an image book by Jonathan Hickman, Nick Patara, with Jordi Belair, very significantly Jordi Belair, on colours. Again, as seems to be the way of this book recently, it seems to sort of focus on one or two characters at a time. This one's about Dr. Fermi, whose first name I forget, and they unfortunately don't think they have the rather useful balloons with the characters in them.
Should we make up a name for him?
Let's call him Dr. Fermi and we'll stick with that for the time being.
Okay.
That is his name. And Enrico, that's it, Fermi. But this one, basically, we find out a little more about where he comes from and the things that motivate him.
Mm.
I won't say any more than that if you're reading it, because otherwise it will be a little bit of a spoiler. We see Richard Fenniman in a little bit of jeopardy as well. It's quite action-orientated, more so than many of the episodes, many of the issues that we've read before. All of it's very enjoying. Hickman does something very interesting with internal monologuing in this, where the Basically, the internal monologue explains how the character's mode of thinking is going, which is sounds a bit. Yeah, I'm not explaining it particularly well, but it's difficult. I don't want to spoil anything, because if you're reading Manhattan Project, you're about to. This is a great issue, and I don't really want to sort of talk to in too much detail about it. I will say, though, that it concludes with a scene that almost actually had me cheering out loud, and almost is reason alone to have bought Manhattan Projects. I think the final page, and I know it's a spoiler to say something cool happens on the final page of a book, but I think the final page of the book is possibly one of the coolest things I have ever seen in a comic book. I freaking loved it.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll say no more. So if you're not buying Manhattan Projects, number 12, hopefully that'll be part of the second collection. I don't know how many issues they're putting in the collections at the moment, but issue 12 just out. If you're not buying it, buy it, get it in collected, get it in the collected edition at the end of. I promise you, if the end of issue 12 disappoints you, tell me and then I'll completely disassociate myself with you. Next up from Marvel, issue 22, and what appears to, could be the final, from what I can make out, Superior Avenging Spider-Man, sorry,
Superior
which is.
Avenging Spider-Man, Spider-Man,
Yes, no, it's Superior Spider-Man. Who are? It's no, it's Avenging Spider-Man. It's basically it's a Spider-Man team-up book featuring Superior Spider-Man and the Punisher. And the Punisher is basically after a Mysterio imposter. Spider-Man's trying to take down this Mysterio imposter who's basically bought this identity from the Hobgoblin. The Punisher comes between him and his quarry. There's some interesting stuff to say about Superior Spider-Man. There's a lot of fun because the Punisher's in it. It's a well-written, zippy comic book. Not necessarily. I enjoyed it, but not as much as I'm enjoying Superior Spider-Man itself at the moment. But as the Punisher says himself in the back in the letters page. Pages, there's a very grumpy at the top of the letters pages. There's a very grumpy Punisher saying, "That's it, I just get one issue. Even the Hypno Hustler got two." I agree, maybe it feels a bit condensed, but it would appear, and again, I've not really done my research, but it would appear that this is it for Avenging Spider-Man, because the next it says at the end of it, next Superior Spider-Man team up issue one. And given that Avenging Spider-Man has been the team up book. For the last couple of years, I suspect that might be the end of that book for the time being, which is, you know, it's had a revolving cast of creators on it, so no one person really has sort of hitched their flag to its mast, as it were. But it's been a highly enjoyable sort of palate cleanser of a book, so I'm sorry to see it go, but I see no reason why the team up book shouldn't be just as much fun. So that's that. That's good. Next, it's all right, Jen. I've only got two more to go. The next is issue 28 of Jennifer Blood. Jennifer has
Oh,
escaped
I
from.
haven't read it yet.
Have you read 27?
I have.
All right. Well, you know she's escaped from prison
I
now.
have. Do you? Oh, no, I was just like don't say anything more than that. I'm really
Yeah.
looking forward to reading it.
I'm spoiling it if you're reading it in trade, so apologies for that. But we find out a little bit more about the mysterious organization. Behind her jailbreak, and frankly, all through this arc, the jailbreak has been foreshadowed by the fact that she is being primed to leave. So yeah, we get to find out a little bit more about the shadowy organization behind that, and there's the usual mix of crime, intrigue, and violence. It's written by Mike Carroll, illustrated by Cuba Bowl, lettered by Rob Steen, and it is its usual brilliant self, I have to say. There's been, you know, three writers on this, all of whom who've. It feels there's a good continuity between all three, has the same feel, and each time I think it feels like the story is winding down to the point where there probably isn't an awful lot more to say. They keep on giving her more reasons to be.
Yes.
So, yeah, again, things have opened up again, and there is a world of possibilities ahead of us in Jennifer Blood. It's an excellent book. The Momisher. Last is another book that I expect you'll be reading, Jane. It's issue 21 of Batman. Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, Danny Meekie. It's Batman at 0 Year. It's issue 1 of 0 Year, essentially. And this is going to take us back to the new 52 Bruce Wayne's origins, which is slightly different, I guess, from what those of us who are familiar with Year 1 the Killing Joke, which features the origin of the supposed origin of the Joker as well. It's a very different world, and kind of in a way, it's almost like it's sort of resetting out the stall of the New 52. That what's happened before is sort of, you know, the history is there to be retold, which is fine. This does, and the reason I mention the Red Hood is that is the villain that features prominently in this book. But it features a young Bruce who's just recently come back from his travels after witnessing the death of his parents, and how his uncle, let's call him Uncle Kane, because I forget his first name irritatingly, Philip Kane, takes him under his wing and tries to reintegrate him back into Wayne Enterprises, which he has grown after having Bruce declared legally dead. We get to see there's lots and lots of sort of Easter eggs for us, all over the place, with, you know, we see the first instance of the Robin symbol, we get to meet the villain of the piece, or a villain of the piece, and it's lovely. I have to say, the art in this is absolutely beautiful. Greg Capullo has been on the book for some time, but actually I think my favourite art appears in this particular issue. I absolutely love it, and I don't know whether it's got anything to do with now I'm never gonna pronounce the colorist's name, because the colorist's first name is FCO, and my stupid brain can't do anything with it. Placiencia. So FCO Placiencia is the colorist. I'm not sure whether the colors definitely. I don't know. They feel like the palette feels like this is awful. The palette feels like a watered down version of John Higgins' work on The Watchmen, which is. There is a page that's entitled "What Do You Love About the City, Bruce?" and it's four panels that follow this one young boy who may or may not be Bruce Wayne. I think it is. It's Bruce sort of going throughout the city. It follows Bruce on the day's trip without his parents into the city. But if you look at that page, hopefully the page at the fish stall. That's the page that's most reminiscent of the way the palette's used here when I compare it to Watchmen. But it looks lovely. It's a great book. Very enjoyable. I have to put my previous continuity head to one side and just enjoy the ride, because it's really good. It's also backed up, as all Batman books are, by a secondary story. This one written by Scott Snyder and James Tynan IV, with art by Raphael Albuquerque.
Hot dog.
Thank you. Which is, again, it's a 19-year-old Bruce in Rio being seemingly taught some lessons, but actually it's Bruce who's doing the teaching, man. It's a great book, and I have to say I love the way it's printed. It's a lovely, satisfying sort of very thick gauge cardboard on the front.
Fancy. It's embossed, isn't it?
Yeah, embossed. It's very, very nice indeed. It's, what can you say? It's got nice... Catching, dude, isn't it?
Yep.
Scott Snyder is doing a really good job on Batman. I sort of think I've said at length on the podcast that it's taken me time to warm up to it, but actually I'm really enjoying I enjoyed this issue of 0 Year, and actually the last few books I'm sort of really feeling my death in the family. I didn't necessarily feel that much. It kind of felt like it got done a bit too quick in some ways, and Caught the Owls maybe the opposite. But no, I'm digging this. It's good. I look forward to hearing what you think about it.
Yes, I haven't read it yet. I had so many to choose from and not really a lot of time, so I am really looking forward to reading it.
Good. Sorry, I was having a drink.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was a drink.
That's all right. Well, you weren't tonight, were you?
No.
Hello, listener. Nick here. I wasn't on tonight's show because we were off finding out about water births. Apparently, you can have babies, you can deliver babies in water. It looks a bit gross, you know, but kind of funny. We got to see a video. It was peculiarly nudie. But there were a few comics that I know the chaps won't have had a chance to talk about tonight, and I thought they were probably noteworthy. So, first things first, IDW have the first issue of Joe Hill's Thumbprint. It's based on a story by Joe Hill. It's written by Jason Ciaramella, with art by Vic Malhotra. And it's the first issue. It's $3.99. It's got this really nice matte finish to the pages. It's a story about a woman who has left the US military under inauspicious circumstances. Back home, her life isn't great, and into what's a fairly comprehensively shitty life, she finds a piece of paper delivered to her doorstep with a thumbprint on it. Unlike The Cape, which was the other IDW book based on a short story by Joe Hill that I have read, this doesn't seem to have any supernatural elements to it. If anything, it feels like a story about chickens coming home to roost. The central protagonist is interesting. She's very conflicted. She doesn't seem very nice. She's obviously quite broken by her experiences in the military. And into this, there may be something bad coming back to her from her past. It's really nicely written by Ciaramella. The art, I've never seen Malhotra's art before. It's got a really nice feel to it. It's got very bold lines, very simple but expressive art, the very muted colours, which I think were probably done by him as well. It's nice. It's the first part. I don't know how many parts it's going to be. And it is a very grounded story, very set in contemporary America. Quite upsetting. There are scenes of torture, and I don't imagine that's going to get any better. But I like it. The other main book I wanted to talk about is number one of a series, of a six-part series from Boom Studios, written by Simon Spurrier with art by Jeff Stokely, called Six Gun Gorilla. I really picked this up off the shelf because Cy Spurrier has been doing such a good job of talking it up recently. I'm not one of those people whose instant reaction to an ape being in something is particularly excitable. I might have been at one point. I think it's kind of goofy and cool that sometimes comics have gorillas in them that talk and stuff. But generally, my experience of the actual finished product isn't great. But he's been talking about this, and because it's him, I'll normally have a look. I was really pleasantly surprised by this. Now, I don't know that... I vaguely recognise the property name, Six Gun Gorilla. I assumed it was going to be some form of Western. What we actually get is this really peculiar background created from whole cloth of this peculiar future war where certain people are sent onto the front lines as a sort of a suicide squad, basically as cannon fodder, who... It's this civil war that apparently has been going on for a really long time. There are kind of trappings of the American Civil War, but this is obviously at some point in the future. It's a war fought in some distant place with these cannon fodder people beaming their experiences back to the people back home, the folks back home. I say that it's futuristic. I don't know for sure. Well, I mean, when you see Earth, it is very much a sort of a Blade Runner dystopia. But there are other weird elements, like, for example, the heavy armor transports that the troops are taken around in this war zone by. They're kind of like gigantic tortoises, gigantic, ugly-looking tortoises. And what you get is effectively a future war comic that wouldn't really be out of place in old school 2000 AD. It's really gritty. It's got a lot of moving parts, really high stakes. You're kind of following this sort of hapless guy who was expecting to be blown apart the second he gets off the transport, as he runs around this landscape encountering people and barely surviving and stuff. And in the middle of all this, you get probably literally is this shadowy figure, as is kind of befitting a Western hero, I suppose, who you get very vague details of being a... Let's put it this way. I was kind of expecting a fairly zany Western. I don't know why. I guess because it's called Six Gun Gorilla. I was expecting the gorilla to be center stage, and what you get instead is this really rich, textured and gritty war story with the gorilla in the background as a kind of almost an unknown soldier sort of character. You get the feeling he's not just a reluctant hero, he's kind of a reluctant participant in this book as well. Sicebury's writing, I don't know, it doesn't sound like much of a compliment, but it doesn't read like a Sicebury book at all, and it's to its benefit in that a really skilled writer can write stuff that's really good and doesn't fall back on their tricks and their voice. And in this, the characters all kind of live and breathe completely separate from him. In some ways, only Spurrier could have written this, but in other ways, you can't tell it's written by him. And it's great. The art, I don't think I've seen Jeff Stokely's art before, and it kind of reminds me at times like Sam Keith at his best back on the Max. But that isn't to say it's derivative, it's just he does this really good job of making quite caricaturish characters feel grounded and real and be real characters that you care about. And I'm really enjoying following the character at the middle of this. I'm going to call him the Librarian. I don't think he's given a name. He's given a designation, but he tends to be referred to as the Librarian. There's this really interesting war as entertainment thread running through it, which is a cool theme when it comes up. This doesn't feel derivative of other things, but it is interesting. You get the feeling that the Librarian, despite himself, might end up becoming a bit of a celebrity back home. It really actually feels a lot like Bad Company from 2000 AD. That is a huge compliment. That was a great series. A story that ends up feeling like a real contemporary war story, despite quite alien worlds and settings. So it's great. I really liked it. I really liked that first issue anyway. And finally, I just want to mention, it was a pretty good issue of 2000 AD this week. Prog 1836 was pretty good. A nice Judge Dredd one-shot written by Rob Williams with art by Trevor Hairsine, albeit another one of those Dredds that kind of just feels like a set-up chapter for a bigger story later on. There's a really nice little terror tale written by David Bailey with art by Will Morris, who I believe won a competition. It's really nice, sort of all grey tones and beautiful art, really creepy little terror tale. But the thing that I really like about this, and it does sound a little bit like nepotism, because Lee Gallagher is, I think, kind of a friend of the show. We really like him. He's lovely. But Defoe is back, written by Pat Mills with art by Lee Gallagher. Now, I didn't warm to Defoe straight away, and then I went back and read the first book and really, really liked that. I thought it was great. And then the second book kind of made sense. I think this is only the third, maybe the fourth book. And it starts with this amazing double-page spread that looks like another one of those vast... This is a story that's kind of a strip that's kind of been characterised by having these vast battles with all of these zombies in them. Lots of carrion, lots of dirt and grit and grime. But it quickly pulls back from that and starts to tell us the story of what happened when Defoe came home after seeing the comet, which triggered off this whole zombie apocalypse. Came back home to his family to see his wife and kids. And without saying too much about it, I think it's probably going to be my favourite book yet, depending on how it continues, obviously. I think it's going to end up being my favourite book yet. We see Defoe as a more hopeful character. We also see a much more restrained story from Pat Mills and some great storytelling from Lee Gallagher. And it looks like it's going to be a quietly horrific story in a way that the previous books can't really manage. There's something about big, brash, violent action sequences that means that even if the stuff you're seeing is horrific and gross, it's not going to creep you out on anything more than a completely in-your-face, visceral Evil Dead 2 sort of way. But I think this is going to be a bit more brooding. I don't think I've seen Lee Gallagher's art and storytelling be this restrained, and it creeped me out, I don't mind admitting, and that doesn't happen very often in the comics. So anyway, those are the three comics I wanted to talk about. Hopefully I'll be back next week. But until then, I hope you have a good rest of the show, and I'll catch you on the flip-flop.
Well, this would normally be the awkward middle bit, but as we haven't got a spotlight this week, this is the awkward end bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
What are you doing with your week ahead, Jane? What plans have you got?
Immediately after the show, I will be eating dinner.
Oh, me too.
And then reading the rest of my comics.
Woohoo!
Yes. I kind of left this weekend free just so I can sleep off this cold. It has really kicked my ass this week. I'm not sure. There is something I'm doing this weekend. I can't remember what it is, and that's a bit worrying. Yeah, there's something going on. I'll remember later. Yes, one thing I am going to do this weekend is pick out some more trades to send to my brother to read, because I want him to love comics as much as I do. And after the success of the ones I bought him for Christmas, so he's read Chew and Saga, and The Umbrella Academy I bought for him as well, so he really digs all of that. So this is just going to have a look through. Manhattan Projects is one that I'm thinking of getting for him. I think he'll like that. I haven't picked it up myself though, but hearing you, Nick, and talk about it, East is West, is that the other one that you guys are?
East is West. Try Conan as well. That's really good.
I'm not sure if he'll dig Conan. I will.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I need to build up to books like that, I think.
Maybe a listener could either tweet or email you to make suggestions for your brother.
It's not the first time they've done that.
Good stuff. Well, you can hear what he likes. And he's read some Batman stuff that he likes as well, hasn't he?
I'm going to buy him the new 52 Batman as well. It's been out of print for a little while, so I'm hoping he'll love that as much as I do.
The Court of Owls run.
Yeah. I haven't given him any new books. But he absolutely loved Saga, and that was just like, oh my God, that's why we're related. And he got around to reading Chew a couple of weeks ago, and then he texted me and was just like, that is brilliant. So he's actually read the first part of Chew that I've never read before. So,
all right.
So I came into the book, I think it was issue 12 I jumped in, so I haven't read the first two arcs. So I'll have to borrow that from him now he's finished.
You definitely will.
Yeah. Cool. Yes, that's it really.
Sounds very exciting.
How about you, James?
Well, I was thinking about what to do with my week, and I was on Twitter, and Rob Liefeld...
No.
Okay, then I'll probably just be doing family stuff.
Family stuff.
I am doing family stuff. It's Father's Day, so I intend to be pampered, although Nikki's parents are coming round to see us. And we're seeing Scarlett's friend, who's just come back from Disneyland, on Saturday, so that'd be lovely. So it's going to be a very, very family weekend.
Yeah.
And I will be lamenting the fact that I'm not going to go and see Man of Steel or Made of Stone, which is... I'm missing out on Steel and Stone, which I'm very upset about.
Oh, you'll watch them eventually.
I will do. I've been told Made of Stone's... Excuse me. I love the Stone Roses. I'm a huge fan. I've been told I need to go out to see it at the cinema, and I'm getting stressed out. I don't think that's going to happen, so...
Aww.
Never mind. But worst things have most definitely happened at sea, and probably will happen at sea tonight, because there's a big posh boat that leaves tonight, which means we get a bloody fireworks display at 10:30.
Oh, are we able to see it?
Yeah, good, but it's loud and obtrusive. I can't see it. All I get is the bloody banging for half an hour. which, to be honest with you, at my age, I can't do anymore. On that note, we should probably say thank you, contributor. Thank you, contributors. And probably thank you to the listener for listening. And hopefully next week, normal service will be resumed.
Yes.
And we'll be back in the studio.
Thank you, everyone. Although,
I think over the next few weeks, I'm not here and you're not here, so it's going to be a bumpy ride, everybody, over the next few weeks. But I hope you'll bear with us. I'll be your captain for this. No, I won't. I'm sorry.
Normal service will resume.
Yeah, eventually. We should probably say goodbye because I railroaded your attempt to do that, didn't I?
No, I was just saying thank you to everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Jane loves you.
I do.
I find it very hard to let people into my heart these days, so I'm just going to give you a warm handshake and a weak smile.
Better than a weak handshake and a warm smile.
That is true. But thank you for listening. We appreciate it as always. But that's us done.
Yep.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
That's all right. You just
thank you for listening, Nick. This is the bit where Jane and I are chatting and not ending the recording yet. Actually, I'm going to stop recording.